Hi, and welcome back to the Childhood Development Initiative's Restorative Practice podcast, where we talk all things RP. For this second season, we resume visiting communities and organisations to collect stories from practitioners around Ireland. We talk to young people, teachers, lecturers, youth and community workers, and restorative practices trainers to gather their insights on the impact of RP in their life and work. Each episode is focusing either on a place with several voices or on a practitioner. If you are not familiar with restorative practices, the restorative approach, the restorative questions, and the work CDI does, you can listen to the first episode of season one of our podcast series where it is all explained.
Hi, I'm Dorothy Danew, Restorative Practice Quality Specialist for CDI, and I'm delighted to be back on the road for this second season of Circles of Connection. For this episode, I went to St. Eltan's Primary School in Cherry Orchard, Dublin, and I met with Brian Fox and Becky Ryan, teachers in the school. Restorative practices were introduced in the school 10 years ago, so it offers meaningful experiences and reflection of how it can look like in the long run. The ups and downs of implementation, what worked, what didn't work, and the progressive building up of a whole school culture. For our listeners who may not be familiar with the Irish curricula, SPHE stands for Social, Personal and Health Education, and AASD classes are designed for students on the autistic spectrum. First, Brian and Becky introduce themselves, their roles, and the school.
Yeah, so I'm a primary school teacher in St. Olton's in Cherry Orchard. I've been here since 2012, so the last 10 years. I've been mainly in the senior end of the school, so 4th, 5th and 6th class. My role in the school is I'm in charge of kind of SPHE and wellbeing among the children. So a big part of my work is, I suppose, training the staff, and then I suppose working towards training the children in the use of RP, and I suppose fostering a positive environment around the school in how we build relationships, and I suppose then how we deal with conflict when it does arise. We're a campus, really, I suppose, rather than just a primary school. So St. Olton's, it started off as a kind of a pilot project. So you have your primary school, you have a nursery and an early years setting where children come in from, I suppose, as young as, is it probably one, maybe even younger at times, depending on the family circumstance. And then we have a care service. So maybe social workers who work with the children during school hours at times and then after school as well. So we'd have a certain amount of children who would use that service after school. So it'd be a support to the children, support to the parents. And now we have kind of a play therapist on site. We have a speech therapist who comes to the school. So I suppose you're looking at St. Olton's being, or trying to be, a sort of a holistic sort of an approach to childcare, that everything is on site. So the aim is for teachers to work with social workers and to work with people who are in the nursery, and that children, I suppose, and families have a safe place to go to from the time that they're one up until the time that they're whatever age. So some children will come back and do kind of a leadership course in the care service, like up until they're 15, 16. There's some children who are there up to their leaving cert. So, I mean, you're looking at a child starting in St. Olton's at 1 year old and being there till they're 18, you know, and now even you have one or two people who've gone through that service looking to come back and work in St. Olton's. There's about 420 odd, I can't remember exactly how many, but about 420 odd children in the school. We have three ASD classes as well. So a huge, like, the children in there would often integrate into the mainstream classes and, or reverse integrate. That would be when the children from the mainstream classes go back into the ASD classes to see how they're run and to see what it looks like for the children who are in their class in a different setting. Yeah, so I like that's there's a lot going on, a lot to manage, but it's a nice place to be. I didn't even mention there the canteen. So we have there's a canteen in the school, so children get like a hot meal every day, which is which is fantastic. It's great. It's something that a lot of places don't have, you know. So our children have an opportunity to get a hot meal every day in school.
So I'm Becky. I'm the nurture teacher here in St. Olsen's and also a restorative practitioner. A nurture room is basically a space for emotional support in the school. So often, you know, we'd be asking the question, is the child available to learn? And if a child has a lot going on for them emotionally, whether that is that they're feeling anxious or angry or a bit withdrawn, it's very hard for them to engage their learning brain while there's a lot going on in the background. So one response we have in our school to that is the nurture room, where children would, you know, be referred maybe by parents or teachers, that if they were to have a space every day that they knew and was consistent, that would give them a space that would be calming, where they could have a bit of an emotional check-in, where maybe they could talk and learn about feelings and what their triggers are, what's coming up for them, or more importantly, maybe what they need and what helps them be ready to learn. If they could get that, then they'd be more able to engage during the day, both socially and also academically. So that is my role at the moment. So I'd have children out in small groups, maybe 4, 5, or 6 of them in a group. And they would come out at the same time every day. And different groups have different needs, so it can look quite different. The younger ones, it might be some play and some learning how to play with others, or just getting that little bit of connection in a smaller setting with an adult. Right up to the older ones, where we would maybe explore a bit more what's going on for them, or what some of their, you know, worries might be about, or what are some good strategies for them. So yeah, that's the nurture room.
Brianne gives an overview of the implementation of RP in the school over 10 years and how it looks like now.
So when I started, it was probably 2 to 3 teachers who were driving it. So Aoife Slack was here at the time, and she was driving, as well as Anne-Marie, who would have been in charge of SPHE, who would have had the role that I have now. And they were huge drivers of RP. Their focus at the start was like particularly strong on the children's use of it in kind of everyday life and on the playground, where the most conflict would have arisen in kind of unstructured times during the day. So they had implemented an RP buddy system where the children were facilitators. And I suppose the aim there was to take pressure off the adults in on one side of it, and also to empower the children to be able to use the questions and to solve conflict in a non-violent way, or a calmer way, and just to actually give them the skills to solve problems themselves. That was the starting point of it. But those two people were huge drivers of it in the school. So I suppose they were role models for me and for the other teachers who came into the school to see how they used RP themselves and how they operated with the children, and why does it work and how does it work. They were the ones, I suppose, who highlighted when training was available, and I suppose pushed different staff members who wanted to learn more about RP to become part of the process in the school. It developed hugely from there. It changed quite a lot over the years. I suppose what we noticed over time was it was quite heavy, the workload on the one or two people who were driving the RP buddies, because every issue from the playground came back to those teachers from the children. And so everything that happened was delivered back to them. And I suppose it ended up being quite a difficult thing to sustain. And for me, when I got involved, it was quite hard to actually sustain all of those children coming back to one focal point. So I suppose we rethought what we wanted it to look like in the school and how it would be maybe a more sustainable thing. So I suppose we went back to the drawing board and said it was important for all of the staff where possible to be role models for the children. So at that point, we decided that we would try and get some people involved in the Train the Trainers course. This was all a process over 4 or 5 years. So I went and did that training in CDI, and yeah, so we went back to the teachers and the SNAs, and actually it's quite a big campus here. So we have like a canteen staff, and we have a care service. So we've tried to make it a whole campus kind of a project. And that was, yeah, it went that way, that we've tried to give everybody the introduction to RP kind of training course, so that everybody knows what it is, they have a kind of a basic understanding of it. And the hope was that if we could make as many adults as possible role models, that would filter into how our children solve problems on the playground or outside of school or even in the classroom. So you'd see quite a lot more conversations happening rather than arguments or raised voices, or, you know, there's been less detentions, or, you know, so it sort of developed naturally that way to try and become a more sustainable approach. But now I think we're trying to go back to the children's use of it, you know, so it's come full circle. So originally started with the children, then we went back to the adults, and now we're trying to focus on the children again. I suppose the reliance on the adults, I mean, they're still 10, 11 year olds. So, I mean, there were times when they were able to solve things themselves and never came back to the adults. But I think it just had to be led by a teacher to try and sustain their energy and enthusiasm in it. And the children want to tell stories. So they want to tell their story. If they've solved a really difficult problem, they want to talk about that. So I suppose it naturally just came back to the teachers who were involved, rather than it being a forced sort of a thing. But that, I mean, there could be 6, 7, 8 conflicts, and that's every day. That's a lot to come back to one or two people. So it is hard to maintain that. But some of the children were absolutely phenomenal at it, particularly the ones who would have been engaged in the most conflict themselves. So they had been there. They'd had those conversations more than anybody. So they were actually better at helping other people solve those problems. So it was brilliant. It's brilliant to see that. It was always fantastic to see those children going, I've been there before, I know what that feels like. And they can help another child solve that problem. I suppose when I took over that SPHE role, I personally found it quite difficult. I didn't think it was the most sustainable thing for one person to manage. Say it was 20 children were trained at one point, like between 5th and 6th class. And every year you had to retrain new people. And depending on the year group, there could be more or less energy from the children, or they wanted to play basketball on the playground instead of doing their RP job, which is like perfectly reasonable, or they were missing out on a day playing with their friends. So, I mean, we tried to chop it and change it, and at one stage it was they were on for a week, and then it was they were on for one day a week. But even the timetabling of that, or someone being in, so it was quite difficult, I suppose, when there was a smaller number of teachers and SNAs who were trained in RP, because I suppose the energy from me and from a couple of other people was hard to sustain, you know. So we decided, why don't we go back to the teachers and the SNAs? And if we train all the adults and everybody's on the same page, then the hope is that you're role models for the children and they start to use it, you know, just because that's the way the adults are, you know? So you're hoping that they're looking up to seeing the way that Brian solves a problem, the way that Becky solves a problem. That's a really good way to do it. And you hope that it filters down. It's very hard to assess it though. It's very hard to know if it has worked or how much it's used. But yeah, the goal now, we've actually started running four lessons on RP. So our school kind of values, we call them, is fresh, it's called. So it's, if I can get them all right now, I'll be doing really well. So fair, respectful, engaged, safe and honest. I'm pretty sure that's it. I helped make that, so I should really know what every letter stands for. We went back, we did kind of four lessons on, that's the values of our school. And they match nicely with RP values. And then at the end of the lessons, we kind of introduce the children to the questions. And say in my class, where they'd hear them quite a bit, if there's conflict, they're like, oh, there's those questions you always ask us. So they already had an understanding of it, but other classes wouldn't. So that's kind of second class to sixth class. So children from about 7 up to 12 would have those lessons every year.
So it's all about building and maintaining good relationships between all in the school. And we talked about deliberate practices to foster this focus on relationships. Do you train people in having good relationships? How do you make it a deliberate practice?
I'd be very careful about saying like we're a restorative school. I think I think we just kind of focus on just building relationships and getting on with people. And I suppose that's maybe an area where we need to maybe look at putting on that introduction to RP for the parents. But we have our family room downstairs in the school, and we have an unbelievable group of parents. We always have, like, so some of them, obviously their children graduate from sixth class, but we have I would say, a really good relationship with a lot of the parents in our school. Even like former principals and people who've been in the school always made a big point of being open with communication with parents. So it's a safe place downstairs in the family room or in the parents' room, where we have parents come every day. They help out with like craft fairs and book fairs and all that sort of stuff. But it's probably maybe like a next step to have a look at opening out that introduction to RP to parents who are in the school, or maybe who are finding it challenging at home, you know, their relationships around homework or just conflict that arises just day to day with children who are growing up. A phrase I would use on things like this is we didn't want it to be a case of luck rather than skill. We wanted to make it like by skill rather than by luck why people were getting involved. So like my starting point was there was a child who was in bad humor, was walking down the corridor. One day they'd come in, they'd had a fight in the playground, and I asked them to stop and sit down, and they just walked right past me. And I saw then Aoife Slack, who was in the school at the time, said the exact same words that I said to that child, and he just sat down and he was able to de-escalate and calm down. So I was going, what is this magic, right? What happened there, right? I was really confused. So I spoke to Aoife, spoke to Anne-Marie, had some conversations around like, what did you do? And that's how I started. So that was by chance, you know, and it was like, they were great role models. So there was loads of opportunities to speak to them about it. But now I suppose the fact that we're giving everybody in the school and in the organization an opportunity to train in RP, we've now been able to see people who've really taken it on board and then target them, for want of a better word, to say, do you know what? I see the way you are around the school, or you seem to really enjoy RP, or it seems to be a big part of what you're doing. Is there any chance you'd like to go forward and do more training? Like, would you like to do the train the trainer? So we started and there was one person trained. Now we have, I think it's five, you know, and I suppose we would be aiming to grow that again, you know? So I suppose that's skill now rather than chance. You know, it's not happening by accident or because someone's seeing it and they like it. It's everybody has an opportunity. So I think that's really, really important. And then in the classroom, I suppose we're starting to explicitly talk to children about what it is. You know, it's not just the questions. It's building relationships. It's our values. And we put it on twice a year now, training for all the adults in the school. And say even this year, we've got through nearly all of our staff in St. Dalton. So we opened it out to some of the local schools. So it's hopefully bursting out into the community as well, a bit more so. But that's, again, that's by design. It's not just by chance. It's grown into that. And you'd aim to keep along those lines. It's kind of hard to put your finger on that one, really, because, I mean, you're in a primary school. So you're in a place where you're working with young children where most people are motivated to have good relationships with the children anyway. I think it's probably easier in our environment. You're getting more people who are understanding of the benefits of those relationships. And even in the context that we're in Dublin 10, I think people realize when they come into the school that if you don't have relationships, that you're going to find it quite difficult until you do build those. You know, even in my own first year or two teaching here, I was a lot louder when there was an issue or you were shouting, or, you know, not everybody comes in like that. You know, I had to go on that journey, but I think we're probably in a place where most people see the benefit of it very quickly and they see it around the school. So I don't think we have to be as specific in how we say, this is how you build a relationship. I think that's, for most people, that's naturally there. I think in other organizations, maybe that might be their big kind of challenge. I don't think that's our one, you know. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I think people are kind of happy to build relationships with children and build relationships I think probably moving from the children to the parents and both that positive communication, and even in terms of how we run our staff meetings or how you approach the management in the school, that was probably the relationship bit that had to be pushed a little bit more, which I think is happening just in terms of how we run meetings now. Part of your SPHG, your curricular teaching, would be supposed to be in a circle. I would say it's probably an area that we fall down a bit. I think at times there's that lack of structure in a circle is something that people shy away from, myself included at times. Or you have a busy classroom, or you go, will I just do this lesson, or will I take the time to put the tables back and put the chairs back and your timing of things. So deliberate circle practice, I think, is probably, I know we've actually had a conversation about it probably twice in the last year about specifically like problem solving circles. You know, I've been involved in them or you've seen them happen. And I think sometimes I do it when I go back to training, or you go back and you meet people from training that you did in RP and you go, oh God, circles are really good. I think I found that harder to put into my own practice at times. So yeah, I think that's an area where we fall down in terms of how we use circles, and do we use them, I suppose, to their fullest potential. But I suppose if I'm not driving at my own classroom, if you're in charge of SPHE, are enough people driving it, or are we seeing it enough to make it a deliberate practice? You know, so it's going back to nearly look and skill. I think at the moment it's probably more look on that side of things, if people are using circles really, really well rather than skill. So that's definitely an area to target.
Yeah. So at the moment we don't have a formal community of practice. And I think we did at one stage, and I think, you know, for lots of schools, COVID interrupted so many things. And since we've got back, there's been so many things that have been a priority. But also in the discussions we've had, we really want to be intentional about how we do that and inclusive about it. And one kind of challenge we face with that is a lot of our campus are trained in restorative practice, not just teachers, but SNAs, caretakers, the lollipop lady. And so we'd love to explore what are some inclusive and authentic but sustainable ways to do some communities of practice. I wonder if it might end up being smaller groups actually in the long run. But we do definitely encourage people when they're trained to find a buddy on campus that they can go to as they're beginning to trial things that can support them. And then also, you know, when we're running circles in September and different things like that, we make certain staff more available to go in and support a teacher as they're on that journey, or maybe a second person to come in if there's a more complex kind of situation going on. I feel like as a team, we very naturally are very supportive, and a lot of informal debriefs probably happen over the campus. But yeah, that piece to make sure that no one is falling through the cracks, maybe particularly on a hard day, because they're the days that you can be maybe more reluctant to go find someone.
Lastly, Brian and Becky talk about the impact the school culture may have on children, adults, and the wider community.
I suppose the difference that I would see is the conversations that you would even hear people having in the office when they're ringing home to speak to a parent. The amount of times that I suppose I would have seen over the years, parents would have been upset or angry coming in, or maybe they heard about the negative things that were happening after it happened, rather than any sort of a conversation about how the child was getting on beforehand. I think there's been a sort of a push towards building positive relationships with parents and with children. So first of all, the children are happier in their class because they know the majority of teachers and SNAs in the majority of times. It doesn't always work out that way. You know, we make mistakes when we're doing it, or you might be having a bad day yourself, but you see people are a little bit less stressed about the behavior stuff. Children are a little bit stressed about it, so situations de-escalate a little bit quicker because there's a good relationship encouraged with parents. Like, there's people that go down to the office now and they make positive phone calls home, or they ring home, or they send a message. Our system where we message parents would be on Class Dojo, it's called. And teachers, now some of them are just doing it because of who they are, but you'd like to think that some of what we're encouraging is filtering into teachers sending a nice message home. Look at the work that John did today, or look at the work that Mary did today, or whatever it is. And that goes home. So then when something does go wrong or something does happen, the parent isn't, I don't think, answering the phone as much now saying, oh no, here's school. It's, right, Brian's ringing me, we're going to have a conversation. So I think those little things that are very hard to assess, or very hard to put, like, you couldn't say like 85% of the time, or it's very hard to know how to go about assessing that. But there's a sort of an atmosphere of even people being comfortable and confident in how they approach difficult situations, you know, or even how they approach relationships. you know, or even how they see parents, that it's not just a parent, it's a person, you know. So I think that that little bit by little bit, even in our staff, the way like the SNAs now have more regular meetings with the principal and deputy principal, where there's a conversation about how are things on the playground, how are things in the classroom. Whereas before it was, if there was a problem, it would be brought to the office. Whereas now there's more of a, I would say, you know, it's I suppose it's my job to look for those things that are happening and say this is happening. But I think that open line of communication between staff and I suppose people in charge or staff and in school management seems to be there for the most part. You know, there will always be breakdowns and things that don't get, or the things that fall through the cracks. But I think those little things are filtering through the school, you know, so, well, you hope they are anyway. What impact does it have on their life? I don't know. You'd like to think that I suppose within their friendships and in their relationships that they're just that little bit calmer, or they're a little bit, or maybe even if they're still getting conflicts, that they de-escalate quicker. That's the hope. Like it's very hard to know how many children do that outside of here, or in terms of their secondary school, what does problem solving look like when they're 15 and 16? You know, it's hard to know what impact you have when they're 11 and 12, because they've so much of their life to live after that. And like you're 15, 16, 17 years of age, there's so much going on in your life. But I suppose even now, like one fella I met who was in the school 5-6 years ago, he's more than that, he's in college now, but I met him in the coffee shop down the road, and he's hoping to come back and work in the care service in the school. He's doing kind of some sort of a social work course, I'm not sure what the name of it is, but he can't wait to get back here, you know. So that's one example. We have another person who's working in the care service now as well, who has come back and is working in the school too. Any children that we have who come back to do transition year work placement, they love coming back, you know. They're so happy to come in and see their old primary school teachers. Maybe that's just a nostalgia thing anyway, but they all talk about their time, anyone who does come back to us, about how much they enjoyed school here. Now, part of that is because they have more homework in secondary school, and that's harder than primary school. So I don't know if that's RP or if that's just secondary school is harder than primary school. But like, I don't know how you judge that one. I don't know how you judge it. I suppose like some of the children that we have here, like will have chaotic lives at times, but if they're able to come back to us, which some of them have done, and say, I'm getting on great. Do you know what? I'm doing all right in secondary school. I'm getting on. Some of them even say, like, I'm getting on well with my teachers. Like, that's the thing they say. I'm getting on all right with my teachers. Oh, great, Jeff. Fantastic. Because they would have had clashes with teachers on their way up. And over time, they've mellowed, or we've helped them to deal with things better. But I've probably had times where you'd see children who you thought might struggle with secondary school and all the relationships, because it's 9 teachers rather than 1, and they're coming back on, yeah, I'm getting all right with my teachers. Now, one of them I don't like, but like it's only half an hour a week, so I'll get on with it. Do you know, that sort of conversation. I don't know how you judge it in the long term, or you judge it from all of them, but anyone who has come back to us has been very, very positive about their time here.
Yeah, so I think something that's working really well in our school is the culture of relationships. That I noticed one morning that so many people greet the children on their way into school and even going down the corridors. And I was walking one morning with a child from the gate to their classroom, and they were greeted by name 8 times. And I just thought, like, that's the power of really strong relationship building. And sometimes even to our detriment now, where we have children doing their learning support on the corridors and they can barely write a sentence because someone's walked by and said, hiya, Brian. Hiya, William. Hiya, Becky. Hiya, whatever. So yeah, I think that piece of building relationships is really strong and going well. My favorite RP stories are always, always just the relationship stories. And, you know, a few of them for me are things like a little boy who's really struggling with his behavior in school and, you know, did some destructive behaviors, shall we say, in a classroom. And the cleaner came to clean it up and he continued to destruct. And the next day when he was regulated and understood what had happened, he went back to say sorry to the cleaner. And she said to him, I'm just so delighted to see you're big smile on your face again, because it made me sad when you were sad. I'm so happy. Your smile just makes me so happy. And he went away and named his teddy bear after her. So, you know, it's those things, those everyday things. Or I know another girl who's older in our school, and she has decided that she wants to be a lollipop lady when she grows up, because our lollipop lady knows all the children by name. She knows how they're doing. She knows the day they're late for school. She knows the day that maybe their mom's been away on holidays and they were staying with their auntie and they've been worried about it. And she's constantly checking in on them. And, you know, I'm going to check with you now by the end of the day. Did you do good work today? And then we have a child in the school who wants to be a lollipop lady purely because she actually wants to be like Caroline, you know. And so for me, it's all those stories. And yeah, some of them don't translate when you make them anonymous, but they mean a huge amount when you're on the ground.
I suppose even meeting children or parents around the place who aren't in the school anymore, and they're always happy to talk to you or have a conversation. So I suppose if they see this school as a good place to be, the school has, like, we have links with the Equine Centre down the road. We have links with a lot of different kind of community-based programs. And so, yeah, I suppose, I don't know what way to phrase it, but, like, even people would come back to us from the Equine Centre or from the different community centres and say, I had such and such in today. They were talking really highly about the school. You know, the young people and the parents would talk quite highly about the school. So I think even our association with other services would kind of highlight, first of all, that parents are aware of the other services that are out there. So even our impact on how we can work with children who are going through different things, or parents who are going through different things. I think we've a positive impact on even people knowing what services are available. We'd have good relationships as well with kind of charitable services around the place that we do fundraisers for. So I think in the area, we've raised quite a lot of money for like the Ballyfermot and Chapel Izzet kind of disability action group, from Bernard, the local Bernardo's group, loads of different charities that we worked with. So I suppose, like, our impact on the community, I think absolutely people around the area would speak very highly about the school and the time that their children spent here, or even the time that the parents spent here with their children. Now, whether it's going to make a huge impact for everybody, or the area is suddenly going to be all rosy and happy, I'm not sure. But, like, I suppose if people are going away and they've had a good time in primary school and they've got happy memories around the place, then they're more likely to, I suppose, to send their children here for the same experience. And you hope that over the long term, I don't know, does that make sense? I've kind of gone off there. Over the long term, that, I suppose, if they're like, we're not too far off actually the first students in the school sending their children back here. And I suppose if over time, the next 20, 30 years, whatever it is, that happens more and more, and RP is part of what we do, then you hope over time that filters more and more into the, but, like, I suppose you can't, it's very hard to say specific things like we have had this impact or we have had that impact. But I mean, I suppose the relationships that we have with other local schools or with the local charity groups or with local community services, and a lot of our children get involved with them and speak highly about the school, means that we have young people who are kind of smiling coming into the place and smiling when they're leaving. And if that's all you can do for someone, I suppose that's a positive.
Thank you very much. You'll hear Brian and Becky again in another episode about restorative teaching.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed our podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to our show.